accession number 23182, reel 4.
Miss George Smith, reel 4. We're talking about when you landed at St. George's.
St. George's. They put me into the American hospital. The doctor there looked at them and didn't do a darn thing about it. And he went missing for 2 hours. When he came back, I said, "Where the heck have you been?" I wasn't very happy at all. He said, "I've been to the cinema, open air cinema." I said, "Oh," and left me with these fingers like that. He said, "Well, I'll do them now." I said, "You won't." I said, "There's a British base. Could you put me through to the British base?" He put me through to the British Army base. So I was on the phone to the duty sergeant. And I said, "I'm a British matlow in American hospital here in St. George's, and I'm not very happy with the attention I've received." And the British sergeant just said, I'll come and pick you up, Jack. Don't worry. We'll come." And he alerted the British captain, the medical officer in the army, before he left, and he came to pick me up, and he took me, I think it was a little hospital called in the village of Prospect in Bermuda. The officer saw them right away and he put me out and he started to perform. It was getting dark. It was dark then.
What did they do to them? I mean...
Well, originally he had tried to put the bones back. He stitched them up, put a cage round, rods through the ends of the fingers, just like a harp, a tennis racket, with cord from the ends of the fingers, tried to pull them straight. After about a week, he said, "I don't think you're going to get these ever straight again. What I will do, I will break them again." I said, "Oh." He said, he pulls my finger, he said, "Did you feel that?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I broke them again." I said, "I thought you had." So, very nice chap.
Now, why did he do that?
See if he could get them straight. But he couldn't. I reported the incident of the American officer to him. And he was the senior medical officer of the island. I do believe he got that American shifted. I think it was disgusting. I know they couldn't do anything on board because we hadn't got a doctor. So I was the only white man in this hospital in Bermuda. I was still there at Christmas.
You were there, what, 4 or 5 weeks?
I was in there till about the end of January. I was in quite a while. So, being as it was Christmas, the staff of the army base were very good. They took me up to the sergeant's mess, fed and watered me, and brought me back to the hospital on Christmas Day. They were very good. No complaints whatsoever there. I was there for quite a while. Dates, I have not got a clue. But eventually I did.
There was no question, because the bullet went on its way and left you.
Yes.
There was no question of you going back with your fingers in
the air. Oh, no. No, I saw it going home.
How did you feel about that?
I thought, oh dear, I'm stuck. But I didn't. No, it was no good worrying, was it? So I left the hospital and went to the British Naval Base at Malabar, HMS Malabar, which was the base. They gave me the job there as boat's crew, going on to ships, coming in, and we used to go alongside, take crew ashore for training and all that type of thing. I couldn't handle the doings, you see.
So what were you doing? I mean, what were you meant to be rowing?
No. Oh, no. With the boat hook. You see, I wasn't very good, and so... I had a job then.
The fingers were still, well, they're still twisted now, aren't
they? Well, oh yes, they weren't good then. They were very tender, you see. So gripping wasn't very good. So I wasn't much good at... So eventually I got a job as coxswain at the launch. I'd never done anything like that before, but... I think I made a darn good.
What was your duties as coxswain there? What did the coxswain do on the motorboat?
You steered the boat, and did that all that type of thing. Came alongside, you know, and you were in charge of the forecastleman and the chappie astern. We used to go into Hamilton. It was a bit dicey going over there. A lot of you had to do the follow the channel because of all the coral, a lot of coral, so we had to go very careful there. Bermuda in those days, there wasn't any cars, there wasn't any buses, there was just a train that used to run through the centre of Hamilton, and along the front used to jump on. And it was very quaint, it was very, very nice indeed. I'd love to go back.
What did you do in Hamilton? What?
We didn't go ashore much. We did go into Hamilton, but I did not go in very often. Prices were Jack couldn't afford to there. So we used to stop at Malabar in the naval base. That's all. Eventually, I had a draft kit to go to contraband control in Trinidad. To get to Trinidad, I had to go back to New York. I got into New York in the American barracks in Brooklyn, and they said, well, you'll have to wait here till we've got a vessel going down to Trinidad, you see. So I must have been there about 6 weeks.
Now, when was this? I know you don't know exactly. In 1944 still, though?
That would be 1943.
44. Because you were at Christmas.
Yes, that's right. 44.
But you don't know when about. I know you're a bit vague on dates on this period.
Yes, very vague.
So sometime in 44.
They gave me a job, looked me up and down and said, yes, I think you'll be all right for that job. British Embassy in New York on Wall Street. I had to attend there every morning. I was my own boss. They gave me a pass to leave the barracks any time I required, and I used to come back any time I wanted.
Now, what were you doing at the British... That's Wall Street, but what were you doing at the British Embassy?
I was messenger. If the staff required a sandwich, I used to go out and get it for them, or used to take papers to other embassies. It was... You used to just wait down in your little room for... in the bowels, and wait for the phone call, and you used to do what you were beckoned, you see. So it's a very good number.
A cushy number?
Yes, if you call it that, yes, definitely. Paid extra money because of living allowance, eating ashore for lunch.
And what did you think of New York?
Big, brash, noisy, but I met some very nice people.
So you were there 5 or 6 weeks?
Yes.
And then did you get your trip to Trinidad?
Eventually I went on an American troop ship to Trinidad. There I joined contraband control, where we used to... go out to Spanish vessels going to the Argentine. We used to search them.
Just Spanish vessels? I mean,
Spanish, that's all. That was the only place, country out of Europe that were running vessels.
What were you looking for?
Contraband.
What was contraband at the time?
Well, anything that wasn't allowed. We used to cut soap even, into, you know, see whether you think they've been tampered with, anything in. We used to go on board, and if it was a liner, there were two liners, the Cabo de Buena Esperanza and the Cabo de Ornis. And we used to get a lot of tankers coming in. And there were some little passenger vessels, Magallanes one. We used to go into the passenger quarters and search all their luggage, see whether you could find anything. And I couldn't speak Spanish. I did learn Spanish eventually with going on board, because we had a Chilean with us and also an Argentinian that had volunteered for the Royal Navy. And of course they could speak Spanish, so they taught us just what to say.
So we made some progress on your Spanish?
We could, yes, because we used to dine on board. We had lunch on board. And, of course, you learned about all the food. They used to give you cerveza, beer, pan and bread, you know, and all that type of thing. You got to know Spanish.
And did you ever find any contraband?
Not really, no. At one time I was told to search this man. I was told, do not talk to him. Be careful. Don't do anything wrong, but give him a really thorough going over. So I did do. I came out. How did you get on, George? I said, all right. He said, why? I said, what's the matter with him? He said, well, he's a German spy. He was in London a few weeks ago. He said, well, why didn't you pick him up then? He said, well, we let him go. We followed him and we knew all his contacts. And eventually he caught the vessel in Spain. He was going to the Argentine, you see. So the next thing I knew of him, he was being carted off the shore. So I had a job there, actually, as coxswain of the boat, and they used to let us use it on a Sunday. Captain Bowman, he was a very nice chap, he used to let us use it for go on little, what we used to call banyans, you know, going swimming in the little bays. Quite another cushy number. So I couldn't do anything else.
These boats were going down to Argentina?
Argentine.
That's where
these
they were
Spanish
all going.
Vessels, yes. We had to search the crew as well, not just passengers.
And you never really found anything?
No. Nothing. We used to take all letters off them and all that type of thing.
I'm still not quite sure what you were looking for. I mean,
well, we used to take all the letters or any correspondence off them, and MI5 and Customs, we were just stooges to them, really. They were doing the actual work, because they were reading all the correspondence, you see.
Now, how many were there in the contraband control group?
I should say about 20.
And how was it organised?
We had this Captain Bowman, and we had a Commander Barr, and then we had two lieutenants. All of them could speak Spanish, which would be a great help. They all lived ashore. They didn't live in the barracks. Well, barracks. It was called HMS Bembo. We had no sports facilities at all. We had nothing.
So you actually lived ashore on HMS Benbow Shore
yes,
Station?
Yes. We had no sports facilities, as I've just mentioned. It was a terrible place. There was an American base next door, and for some unknown reason, we never had any contact with them. Why, I do not know. Yet we had a fence dividing us, and they had all the facilities, but we didn't. The only thing we had was a rotten table tennis table. That was the only sports facility we had.
What about the general conditions, you know, your huts, the food, the rest of it?
They weren't good. Not compared to the American huts. No. No, they weren't good. Food, I don't think they were good. I wasn't, of course I wasn't butchering then. So, they wasn't good.
Now, were you happy to sort of stay there, or would you rather, I mean, would you
no,
rather...
No, I would have rather been on board a ship. It wasn't very good at all. Because you hadn't got any amenities whatsoever. The only thing you had was a canteen for beer. Well, you don't want just sit and drink beer all night, do you?
So you would have rather got to sea, but your fingers were too bad to allow you...
Oh, yes, they weren't good. They were mending then, naturally. I mean, can't bend them. They won't bend, but, I mean, I can...
So you were keen to get back to sea. So, but how long were you there for?
We were there till the end of the European War.
Do you remember VE Day? I mean, did you celebrate?
VE Day. We didn't celebrate, no. No. It just came and went.
Why were there no celebrations? You know, I mean...
I don't know. It was one of those places. There was nothing at all. And going ashore wasn't in Port of Spain. Wasn't going ashore luxury. You know. I mean, it was...
And how long were you there after VE Day?
Not long. We caught an American troop ship back to New York. We were in New York about a fortnight, and we went on one of the, what we call the Woolworths aircraft carriers. We took passage on that to the Clyde.
And do you know when you got back, roughly?
Roughly? I should imagine July. 45, that would be, wouldn't it?
Now, what happened when you got back?
Went down to Chatham Barracks. Had quite a good leave. Went home, naturally. Got back, and they said, you've got a draft chit on HMS Loch Arkaig to the Pacific. We never got there, being as the bomb had dropped, so that, and we were taking U-boats from Londonderry out into the Atlantic and sinking them.
Who were, sorry?
We were.
On which ship?
The Loch Arkaig.
You see, you did go to that ship, it's just they didn't go to
yes, I had a draft to shit to HMS Loch Arkaig.
What were your first impressions of the ship?
Very good.
What type of ship was she?
A frigate.
And what was she like? What was good about her?
Seagoing qualities were very good, and it was riveted and not welded, and she was a good sea boat. I was never sick at all. I went as a butcher back again, butchering. So doing the same things, of course, that was proper Royal Navy messing, and we used to deal with each mess, you know, and same as I explained before.
Did anything in particular happen? Or?
No, only that we lost a couple of the U-boats with the rough seas, you know, we were towing them out.
Tell us exactly what you had to do, because that's quite an interesting job. What exactly were you doing?
Well, apparently this was part of the peace agreement that we couldn't use the U-boats or the metal of them at all. And we had to take them out and sink them.
How were they sunk?
By gunfire. We used to target practice.
And where, you sank them in the Irish Sea?
Yes, you had to go so many miles out into the Atlantic.
The Atlantic, sorry.
Yes. Mm. Yes. How many miles? I should say about 500 or 600 miles out. Wouldn't like to say.
So a long way out?
Really, yes. Oh, yes, you had to take them out a reasonable way. 400 at least, you know. Mm.
And how were you able to do your job as a butcher with your fingers? There was no problem?
Yes, no problem.
So what happened next?
I got demobbed from that. I was on her for about 12 months.
So demobbed around about July 46?
May. Say about May then, or June. May.
And what 46. Was the demobilisation procedure? How was it done?
We pulled into Londonderry after being out, and I was. Someone said, "Tanky, your relief's on board." So I said, "Oh, good." I promptly went down the gangway and sprained my ankle. That was a good start. So within 2 days, I was in Etherington Barracks in Londonderry, waiting for permission to go, you know, for demob. We had to go to York. So we caught the boat from Larne to Stranraer. Eventually we got down to York. It was quite a journey from there. And then the demob procedure was in York. And that was about the end.
Now, what about your post-war career? I mean, how did you settle back into...
Post-war, I went back butchering, which wasn't good.
Why not?
Well, the rationing, and you were treated as though you were still an errand boy. There was no... They hadn't got the... You didn't need a full staff, you see. So, it wasn't good. And the chances of getting manager was few and far between, unless you'd have waited and waited. So I managed to join the post office. Went in as a postman, postman high grade, and I always wanted to go onto the counter. So I passed the limited civil service exam, which I passed, and I went on to the counter. Did 6 years on the counter, and then went on the accounts branch, wireless records, prosecuting defaulters with the licenses. Wages, survey branch, staff branch, and that was where I finished.
A successful career in there. Now, actually, how did you feel when you heard that the Bullen had been sunk? Because it was sunk in fairly awful circumstances.
I did not know about the Bullen had been sunk until I was in Londonderry, and I happened to be on the forecastle. And there was another ship just behind us, and her stern was by our forecastle. And I saw a chap on the stern who used to be on the Bullen. I said, "How did he get on?" He said, "Oh, we got sunk just after, you know, getting home." So I said, "Oh, I didn't know." He said... But, of course, we were only talking from a distance, you see, and I never saw the chap again. And he's never been to any of the reunions. I can't understand it.
You go to the Bullen reunions?
We used to do, yes. It's finished now. Yes. Been to them all, yes.
Had you lost many friends in the sinking? Or I mean, you hadn't been with her long.
No, I hadn't been with her long. So, no hard, steadfast friends, no.
But the association, the Bullen Association...
The association was always good. It was a nice ship. It was a happy ship. Yes. Very good.
Thank you very much.
And the crew was good.